So, yeah, how do we start? So first of all, very welcome, Caleb. I'm very happy that you're here with me.
Me too. I'm happy to be here, Alex. This is our second conversation since you came on the Decentralized Consciousness podcast. And so now we're doing on the wildlife, and I'm really excited.
Same here. And I must say, since we recorded that episode for your podcast, I've been deep diving a bit into your community. You have a wonderful Telegram group. And I really like what I see.
Awesome. Yeah, that's
really
great.
Really cool. Awesome. Tell me more. What are you working on at the moment? What is all that, what I fell in love with? Tell me. Tell everyone.
Right. Let me figure out how to start without making it too convoluted or too wordy. So I get the sense that there are a lot of Bitcoiners that listen to your podcast, right?
Mm-hmm. That's true.
Yeah. So as we go down the Bitcoin rabbit hole, really the name of the game when it comes to Bitcoin is sovereignty. And we go down these rabbit holes as we increasingly find that we are more and more sovereign. And we kind of discover as Bitcoiners that over generations, we have chose to give up our sovereignty to various institutions. And, you know, once we begin questioning the money, we're like, well, what about, as an example, relevant to your podcast, what about education, for instance? Is this something that we could self-custody, as the Bitcoin Homeschoolers podcast talks about self-custodying education? It's like, what other things can we self-custody? And the group, which I am a part of, it's a community, I guess, is the Decentralized Consciousness Community. And the ethos of that community is basically the same as any other Bitcoiner, but it's taken it to a spiritual level. And one of the slogans that a lot of people in the community really relate to is the slogan of sovereignty on all levels. And what this really means is becoming sovereign at the deepest level of your person. And everybody has different models for how the world works on more of an esoteric or spiritual level. But it's my belief that we are spiritual beings. We are infinite beings who are having a human experience, an experience of limitation. And our objective as unlimited beings is to come here and experience, learn, and grow through limitation, and to eventually evolve into unlimited beings within a reality with a bunch of rules, right? And so what the Decentralized Consciousness Community is really all about, and the project of Decentralized Consciousness, is exploring that with other people who are interested in doing the same. I think I'll just stop there for any questions, because I know that was a lot.
I like it a lot. I especially like the point that you said it's for growing together, because I've been working on myself for quite some time until I came to the point where I thought, okay, that has been a nice journey so far, but now I need to connect with others to grow with them, because I think you cannot go all the way without the impact of others around you. So, how do you see that? Do you think we can grow without anyone else? I mean, there are so many people, not so many, but there are people out there being on all alone, doing all that work by themselves. Mm-hmm.
For sure. Anything is possible. And if the concept of sovereignty on all levels, and sovereignty at the deepest level, the soul level, this unconditional, expansive, infinite being that each and every one of us are, if we didn't have that sovereignty, then we would be limited in the way that we could experience this growth. So yes, there are certainly people who come into the human experience, and their journey is completely on their own. You know, you hear about gurus who will go into the mountains and basically live a life completely secluded and on their own, and that's just how they grow and experience life, and it's a very different path. Mm-hmm. The same goes for, you know, like monks, or for some reason Tibetan monk is coming to mind, because, you know, they live a very quiet and humble life.
Mm-hmm.
The experience that our souls have chosen to live out is a different one. We've chosen to come into a world which is more connected socially, which is more part of the mainstream cultures. You know, I lived a childhood that's just the way that life was sort of unfolded for me. My childhood was very, I would say, average when it comes to, you know, it wasn't particularly extremely religious or spiritual. But then at a certain point, my journey was to connect with other people on this topic. And I think that it's a big part of my personal journey. Although I could choose to say, abandon all of the things that, you know, I've known for so long. And in one way, that path might, that path of abandoning the old identity might allow for some greater growth at a quicker pace. But I also like the life that I'm living too. And I like the experiences that I'm having, and I like the feedback that I'm getting from the universe as I grow spiritually and as I grow with other people. So kind of a long-winded answer to your question, does it require growth with other people? No, I don't think so, but it's certainly part of my path, and I find it extremely valuable to be able to leverage the perspective and experiences of people who are also trying to navigate this world and navigate through similar attachments, programs, and identities. So for me, it's extremely, extremely powerful.
True. I love it. How did that whole, like, sovereignty on a soul level start for you? What happened before? What was maybe the point where you realized that you were living maybe an average life, and what led you to discover or maybe choose that rabbit hole?
Yeah, right. It's a great question. So if you haven't, I would recommend looking into what's called human design.
Mm-hmm.
And human design is based on, it's kind of like astrology. It's kind of a different take on astrology. But the idea is that based on the time and location of your birth, you can derive like the design of your personality. And the way that because I talked earlier about limitations, and you can get a better understanding for the limitations of who you are as a person and who you've chosen and the ways that you've chosen to limit yourself in this experience as tools for growth and learning. And in my human design, my personality is like my main personality type, I think, is called a projector. Mm-hmm. And what a projector basically is a personality who sees possibilities for improvement everywhere in the world. And I think that there are probably a lot of projectors in the Bitcoin community, or at least they have some, you know, some aspect of this personality type within them. Mm-hmm. So, you know, my whole life, I have really seen the world and questioned. In fact, my dad, he always tells me that I came out of the womb asking why. why? Like, why is it this way? Why is it this way? Why does it have to be this way? And to me, that is one of the simplest ways to expand your mind, to just ask why at the most ridiculous things. Why is the sky blue, for instance? You know, all of these, and being able to approach the answer to that question with a neutrality such that you don't judge yourself. So there, while there might be a scientific answer to that question, there might also be other answers that's like, I guess that makes sense. For instance, I always laugh at this example, but when I was a kid, there was a cartoon and they asked that question and the answer was, well, all of the other colors were taken. So blue was the only one left for the sky. And as you know, as ridiculous as that sounds, on some level, it kind of feels right. It kind of makes sense. It's like, just, you just look at the beauty of the landscape of the world and it's like, yeah, blue works really well here. So anyway, that's kind of how I've always viewed life. I've always had a pretty deep desire for self-improvement and expanding and exploring and growing. And it wasn't until I think I read the book Think and Grow Rich, mm-hmm. that I really convinced myself that I could do anything. Like, human beings are capable of doing anything. And one of my favorite examples of that in the book is the example of the author's son. So Napoleon Hill is the author's name. And his son basically was born without any of the organs for hearing. So I don't know if he like physically didn't have an ear. It kind of, the way that he wrote the book, it almost makes it sound like he didn't even have an external ear. Yeah. But in the book, he talks about how he taught his boy that he wasn't deaf. And he basically instilled that same, very same belief in his own son. He basically taught him that not only can you hear, but your ability is a superpower. And it was that kind of mindset that I think really tripped me down this rabbit hole of self-improvement, and to which point then I fell into learning more about the law of attraction. And then from there, it was, yeah, books about like Joe Dispenza, who's who talks a lot about very similar topics and changing the programming, and then at some point I basically stumbled across I met Sama Catharo, who you could consider like the decentralized founder of this project in the community, and from there, you know, we started growing together. We started doing sessions and meditations, and we did several men's groups, and we've just kind of been down that rabbit hole ever since. So yeah, it's I think it's a symptom of who I am, and it's just part of, this is just where everything has led up to this point.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting. We were influenced by the same books, maybe, because I read also Napoleon Hill, Joe Dispenza, and all mm-hmm. of that cool. stuff.
Yeah.
And I really had the feeling like they are presenting us. I mean, Napoleon Hill's book is about money, but if you read it, you mm-hmm. clearly understand that this is the recipe for manifesting stuff. And then I stumbled across Human Design as well, and nice. That was hilarious because I'm a manifester, and I was nice. So into Napoleon Hill because of this manifestation thing right. that was going on there. I loved it.
Mm-hmm.
Really loved it. Awesome.
Did you have good luck with your manifesting?
Yes, actually, what I saw is that I'm really good at manifesting healing in and on my body. So I chopped off my finger and I just put it back on, and I meditated a lot. And I don't shit you, I don't know if it was 48 or 72 hours when I went back to the hospital. And it was just normal again, you know. Feeling, it was a little bit numb until maybe even this year, until a friend of mine, she's into healing as well. And I didn't really want to have this energy input from outside because I know I can do stuff by myself. But she was like, no, I saw it clearly. Right. Let's try, blah, blah. And I was like, okay, let's do it. And she touched my finger and I cried like a river. And I'm not a crying person, really not at all. I'm normally very, I don't know. Yeah, I'm not really.
More private.
More private. And in German, we say you're not built close to the water. So I'm not really built close to the water. And since then, even the numb feeling is gone. So it's back to being completely normal. And since it's incredible. And I'm way more relaxed when it comes to knives, machetes, and all these things. I'm like, chop off the next thing. I'm going to do it again. Yeah,
you're not terrified. most people would be terrified to ever touch a knife again.
yes. But to be honest, I was just very happy to see I finally have the opportunity to prove what I'm capable of, because I was really convinced. Now I can show to myself, not anyone else, but to myself, that I can do it. And I did it again because I don't remember if it's this. Yeah, it was even the same finger. It happened again and I was able to heal it again. And then I was thinking about, why is it always the same finger? Doesn't matter.
That is interesting though, because we do have what's called their etheric bodies, basically. They're vibrational versions of our bodies, and when we have certain distortions in those bodies, they'll manifest in our physical bodies. In fact, that's where everything in our reality comes from. We have you can almost look at it like Neo in the chair on the ship. We have that version but we just can't see it with our three-dimensional senses. A lot of people are starting to wake up and they're able to really sense these things with like their inner senses. But that's why a lot of times people will have issues in the same parts of their bodies, and they'll struggle with it for much of their lives, is because they'll have traumas from childhood or from past lives that get emotionally, their emotions, they take the form of emotion, because everything is an emotion, and they'll get stuck because they don't know how to process it. So they kind of, what we do with a trauma usually is we get so scared of it that we rationalize it away and we distract ourselves with other things, but it's still there. The emotion is still there. We haven't fully allowed it to process naturally. And so, obviously there was something in, you know, that part of your energy body that manifested on that one specific finger. And it could be, you know, a repetitious pattern from a previous life, or it could be trauma from from your current life. But that's kind of the way that I understand. That's how my models explain that, how it works anyway.
I was thinking the same, but I wasn't really able to figure out what it was in the end.
Right.
Let's see. I think something very interesting what I learned from you, and what I would never had the idea by myself, actually, although I do meditate every day, I was never thinking about meditating before starting a recording for a podcast. But we did it for your episode, and I was so excited to ask you to do that. We can do it for my episode as well. Before we hit recording, we have a little meditation session. And I really, really like it. And you know what came to my mind when we meditated earlier? My weirdest encounter in a recording was really a dude that was, snorting cocaine before we recorded an episode. And I was like, wow, this is like a huge, huge difference, you know, how you enter a conversation and what kind of things you are channeling. It is just incredible. And I really like that meditation because it brought me out of my monkey mind because I was so busy all day. And I was in a, not nervous, but you know, when you're so fired up from all the stuff you're doing and blah, 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 and the next thing and next thing. And you said something that I really liked, that we are coming back to what do you really want to do on this planet when we take that time to connect. And it's so true. I love it.
Yeah. And like I said, I really appreciate that, you know, you gain value from it. And there are, and everybody, anybody is capable of doing this. And because I run into a lot of people who say, you know, oh, I could never meditate. I have such a hard time meditating. I can't do it. But the reality is that you are never, ever doing it wrong. It is impossible to do a meditation wrong. And I'll tell you why. It's because everything that happens in your life is happening for you. So at the beginning of your meditation journey, you know, it's like an exercise, just like anything. You get better from it. You derive more palpable results from it the more that you practice it. But in the beginning, all you're getting is more and more feedback for the way that you are experiencing life on the, I guess, the vibrational level that you're experiencing life at that time. Excuse me. So if you are, your mind is very, very busy, you are kind of off-centered and disconnected from the higher self, you know, the lower self, the lower vibrational self is going to come in and really dominate those meditations. But all we have to do, that's the beauty of this mechanism, is all we have to do is allow it to do its thing and to heal those lower vibrations. So earlier when I was talking about things getting caught up in the emotional body, the only really the main practice, we don't have to say any mantras, we don't have to, I mean, these are all tools that are helpful, don't get me wrong, but at its core, just like the way that our bodies heal themselves. So if you get a simple paper cut, for instance, and the body automatically sends blood platelets to seal it up and heal it completely on its own without even having to try. That's exactly what's happening in meditation. Your highest self is helping you to work through some of those, that lower vibrational kind of BS that you've just been trying to shake off for so long. And when you sit there with it without taking action, that's the big thing. So you sit there, you acknowledge, okay, right now I have a desire to turn on the TV. Right now I have a desire to go and eat food. And then you feel what it is that's behind those actions. You can feel, you know, something, maybe you're not even able to explain it. You can just feel the patterns. You'll find that over time, your meditations will become so deep and you can feel them so deeply that you can really then take that higher vibration out with you through the rest of your day. And I think that's pretty much what I wanted to explain on that, I guess.
Love it. I always read that it's most beneficial if you meditate after you wake up or before you go to bed or both. But what I figured out over the last couple of months is that if I meditate in the middle of the day, it has the craziest impact on
the rest of the day.
Yeah, first of all that, and what kind of crazy visions or experiences.
Oh, cool.
You can have. Last time I was meditating in the sun and I had my eyes closed, of course, but the sunlight comes through and I had that somehow vision that there in the middle of my body, there was like a golden line and it was spreading golden light everywhere, but only from the exact middle, like someone cut like exact from head to toe, and from there there was like golden light, and it was so crazy. It was really hot and warm, but not from the sun. It came from inside myself. It was so hot and warm, and I was so fucking happy. And after that meditation, I really felt that long-term benefit. And of course, it's nice in the morning and in at night, but the craziest stuff happened to me middle of the day with the sun.
Wow. That's so cool. Yeah. So exactly. It just, I mean, the sun is the basis of all energy on the planet. You know, all of the energy came from there and continues to come from there. Because energy, as we know, is never created or destroyed. It just moves around and transforms. So you could almost look at like the ultimate mother of all of humanity and the earth. Everything that we see around us is like the physical representation of it is the sun. So it doesn't matter what time of day you do it. It's just what kind of works best for you. Because sometimes I have really good meditations I'm labeling it, but like really powerful what I feel like are really powerful meditations in the morning, sometimes in the middle of the day, sometimes in the afternoon. It's all, like I said, it's all happening for you. And if you are meditating, if you are not meditating, it's all happening the way that it's kind of meant to be. And you are being guided to live the life that you were sort of fated to live.
True. Really cool. You mentioned that energy is never lost. And that reminded me of something I had a discussion with someone about. Bitcoin is using so much energy, and I know you're into Bitcoin, so I'm asking you that. And I was arguing, first of all, the US dollar system is eating up way more energy and worse energy, and doesn't matter in comparison, it's just hilarious. But the second thing is, if we think about it in a holistic way, energy is never lost. So I don't know, I tried to explain to him that I see this as something that is way beyond these numbers and everything.
Right.
He didn't really get it because I'm really bad at explaining this, as you can see. But what is your thought on this?
Yeah, that's a really... You bring up an interesting point, which is even broader, I think. I kind of actually mentioned it earlier when I was talking about when I asked, why is the sky blue, rhetorically? And I think you're talking about the merging of a highly, highly scientific and logical society. And a lot of Bitcoiners are this way too, because Bitcoin at the end of the day is just a bunch of ones and zeros, and it's really pretty black and white. But then when you get on to the more spiritual and esoteric side, I think the one thing about spirituality that is absolutely undeniable is emotions. Emotions are things. Emotions are real. And anybody, even with a logical, you know, the most logical person on earth, cannot deny that emotions are real. And the prime example of that is, look at how, look at the devastation that emotion causes. The emotions of anger and hatred cause across the world, and the pain that we see in wars, the innovation that results as, you know, trying to feed like this gigantic fiat war machine. And it's because people are angry. It's because we seek power as human beings, or other human beings, I guess, seek power and control. And these are all emotions. You know, they want to feel in power. They want to feel in control. And that's what I think what you were hinting at with, you know, you're trying to explain to somebody who is highly rational. It's like, first of all, yes, there's the, I don't know if it's one of Newton's laws. That's But anyway, maybe it's a law of thermodynamics. I think that's what it is, where energy is never created or destroyed. So as we know, you know, Bitcoin is not destroying energy, but it is transforming it. And so that's the physical argument. And I think that the argument against that would be, yeah, but it's transforming it uselessly. And it's like, yeah, I guess because you can't, you know, the argument is coming because you can't see it, taste it, you know, feel it, touch it. It's not the same as, and you know, expending energy to at a power plant to, you know, turn on a light bulb, something that you can see and experience. But then on a deeper level, which I guess Bitcoin has that too, obviously, you know, you're expending energy to be able to send a transaction. But if they don't align with that, you know, if they shut that argument down, the big thing about Bitcoin, which is just so crazy, is the energy that's being expended as part of the Bitcoin network is going to the people that use it. So I believe that Bitcoin is part of a higher vibrational human society who functions in a way that is much more connected with their highest selves and therefore connected with one another. And so it's almost like Bitcoin is taking that energy, that potential energy in the form of coal, in the form of wind, in the form of solar, I think the majority of it now, mining wise, is now considered quote unquote renewable. And it's transforming it and injecting us, the people who use it, with an experience that allows us to connect with a higher vibrational version of us as individuals, and as a resultant, a higher vibrational world. I know that's difficult to explain to someone, and it sounds a little bit crazy, a little bit woo-woo. But then this is emotion. This is an emotion that I feel. This is an emotion that, just the same as the emotion that causes this devastation in the world, I think this is the emotion that will cause us to move into a bright orange future.
Well, I have the same feeling that I'm being pulled somehow by myself, but not myself like I am right now. But it's definitely by myself into a direction I cannot even describe, but it's just going into that direction. And maybe this is what you are experiencing, because it somehow sounds similar to that.
Yeah. And you know, sorry, keep clearing my throat. The thing that what's really interesting is I'm reading a book right now. It's called Transurfing, and I just started the book. Have you heard of it?
I love it.
Yeah. Okay. Awesome. So I just started reading this book about transurfing, and it's, from my understanding the general premise of it, it's about shifting your realities. And so if you're interested, I'd highly recommend looking it up. But the chapter that I was just reading last night was about these energetic pendulums. And I was thinking about the energetic pendulum of Bitcoin. And basically what we do as creators, human creators in this reality, and because everything is energy, everything, absolutely everything that we experience in the world is, maybe I shouldn't say absolutely everything, but the majority of the things that we experience as part of a collective are considered to be a part of a pendulum. So there is the pendulum of public education and all of the beliefs that go into that system and how that system works and how we should behave in that system, how we feel about that system. And I think that there is a pendulum to Bitcoin as well. There definitely is. And it's a higher vibrational pendulum. It's higher. It has a more, and when I say higher vibrational, I just mean it's got a stronger connection to the highest self of the people in it. it's not so based in the fears of emotion, but instead emotions of hope and peace and love. I mean, sounds all very hippie, but this is just the way that it works. And the one thing that came up that I just read last night is, and maybe I'll have to reread it so I'm not missing something, but he wrote that all pendulums have a devastating effect. And I was like, okay, but how can that be? Because there are good pendulums in the world. There's the pendulum of Bitcoin, like I was just saying, which I believe to be a very good thing. There are pendulums of, you can consider any or a lot of religious teachings as being a positive force for mankind and teaching morality and teaching love. The pendulum of Christianity would be, because I grew up Christian, and you know, the pendulum of the teachings of Jesus, I think those are all positive things. And this gets to an interesting spiritual / philosophical argument, which is, we are again experiencing a limited version of reality. And when we create a pendulum of any collective, we can be pulled by its higher vibrational nature. If it inspires us to be better and be more connected to ourselves, but at a certain point, we're also ready to evolve beyond it, and we're also ready to let it go. And I think that's kind of happening with a lot of the religions across the world. I think that a lot of people are moving away from religions, and they're moving into what can be considered kind of a new age spirituality. And even new age spirituality has its own limitations and, you know, has its own sort of corruptions, if you will, but it has helped people kind of lift people up. And then once you get to that point where you're like ready to leave those models behind, you can find a new pendulum and you can create new things. So yeah, I think humanity is certainly at a point now where Bitcoin is just continues to gain more and more and more momentum and will continue to pull more and more and more people almost unwittingly. Because right now we're very aware of what's happening and we're very passionate as early adopters of Bitcoin and early understanders of Bitcoin, if that's even a word. We are wanting to reach out to other people and we're very aware of what's happening. But I think that the masses, gradually then suddenly, the masses will get moved into this pendulum of a greater society, based in this better form of this new form of money. And they won't even realize what's happening or what's caused it. It'll just be here. So.
True. I think it's very interesting. Did you ever have any kind of spiritual experience around Bitcoin?
That's a good question. No, personally, no, actually, I haven't. I guess it kind of depends on how you define experience, because when you mentioned that, I immediately thought of, you know, visions or, you know, some of these more esoteric experiences, meditations. And I think that ultimately it's all very interconnected. And As I said at the beginning, I think that, you know, this is all a part of the journey that my highest self has decided I should be taking. And Bitcoin is just a tool set. It's a tool. It's a higher vibrational part of this life. But if you want to, you know, if you want to get really kind of crazy and deep, there are people who who I know who have actually experienced Bitcoin on, or like meeting Satoshi, the node of Satoshi. So when we in the decentralized consciousness community, because a lot of us are, majority of us are Bitcoiners, we talk about connecting with your inner node, mm-hmm. which is the, you know, it's like the sovereign, the deep, the most deeper, deep, deepest sovereign part of oneself. And, you know, I have a friend who has met and experienced the node of Satoshi. And, you know, my curiosity went like, okay, so what did you ask him? Like, I want to know everything. And he's kind of explained to me, it doesn't really work like that. See, cause I'm meeting Satoshi on a node level. And when we meet each other on a node to node level, things are much simpler. The world is much less complex, and you don't really get the answers that you would think that you would really want to get. I guess the best way that I can equate it is, you know, a lot of people will talk to God through prayer, and this is probably a little controversial, but. You know, the highest level God is, in my belief, is yourself, is your highest self. And when you get to that truth, you realize that all directions are the direction that you should be going. All answers have some level of validity to them. So yeah, there. And the other thing too that I think is important to mention is that we can actually experience anything vibrationally, and it's just tuning into the emotions of that thing. So one way to, if you want to just try it out yourself, to meditate on anything, you just sit down with the intention to connect with that thing on emotional level. And I can say that I have had many, many meditations where I will connect with my monetary programs and my fears of money, my desires to take action around money. So, you know, you can tune into the different paradigms of pendulums, I guess, of money, Bitcoin versus fiat. You can tune into your own money programs. It's all accessible. It's all right at your fingertips.
True. I really like it because I had some experiences with that as well. And mm-hmm. I had the feeling like I was talking to an entity that represented somehow money, but I don't have the feeling that it was this fiat money system. It was just, some kind of, wait a second. Now the dog is peeing everywhere. Thank you. Alfred, up inscription.
Komm aber flott, bitte.
Oh no.
Ey, pass auf. Nicht weitergehen. Stopp. Der hat überall hingepisst. Du hörst jetzt auf. Der hat gepiepst und ich habe dir Bescheid gesagt. Ich habe dir geschrieben, du hast nicht gehört. Ich habe dich sogar angerufen und hast nicht gehört. Mir da egal.
Du musst mich rufen.
Hallo, bitte, mach das. Kannst du das?
Nein. Doch,
du musst aus der Tür aus dem Fenster klettern und durch die Tür wieder reingehen und den rufen.
Disgusting. Ah, poor old boy. He's just too old to live.
Right.
Crazy.
That's tough. Yeah, we lost a dog in November, and yeah, that was tough.
It is tough, really, because I never lost a dog until now, still all alive, but just the thought of losing them makes me cry. It is crazy, really.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I just had, we lost a dog in November, and I, as a child, we lost many dogs because we had a lot of dogs when I was a kid, but this was my first dog, you know, the first dog that I ever got. And actually, thankfully, I, you know, had been down my spiritual growth journey for a while. And so I did my best to experience those events from a spiritual standpoint and knowing that everything would be okay. And not just that everything would be okay, but that everything was happening for me. And there was something there for me to experience. And so when I wanted to cry, I cried. You know, I just let it happen. I didn't try to push it away. You know, I just experienced it. And this was like, it's quite amazing, but this was like her last gift to us, I think. You know, the pain and suffering of going through losing her was a gift, because it was an opportunity for us to, to connect with something that was so powerful that we didn't even realize was there, and to move through something that we'd never done before. And I think that's, like I said, I think that's what this experience is all about. So it's not just all about, you know, sunshine and rainbows and happiness. Sometimes we get to experience the pain on the deeper level too.
Mm-hmm. And I think the deepness of the pain says a lot about the value of happy moments you had before, or
exactly. And it's really all about contrast, because it is, the universe is one. The energy of the universe is oneness, where I wrote a short article, which you can find on bitcoin-consciousness.com, called The Short Story of Everything. And, you know, it was kind of a story about, like, if you can imagine that God or the universe, source, you know, the main thing that exists said, you know what, I know everything, I am everything. What more is there? And he just like kind of got bored, and he was like, I want to experience myself on a deeper level. And he just broke himself down, him or herself down, into infinite number of fractals, and in order to experience limited versions of itself. That's really the basis for identity. Identity means that there are certain ways of classifying a thing. So if I'm like right now, I'm sitting in a chair, there is a strict definition for what a chair is, and there is a strict definition for what a chair is not. And it's the contrast between is and is not, which make the thing be able to exist in the first place. So without pure joy, there is no pure pain. There is no pure suffering. This is just like the duality of nature. If the pain and suffering did not exist, then everything would be all joy, and everything would be sunshine and rainbows, but we wouldn't label it as joy. It just would be what it is. And we wouldn't be able to, it's the contrast between those two, which make that, that joy so amazing and so beautiful.
True. I really like it, because someone once told me that there has to be light and shadow. It doesn't make sense if there's just one. Doesn't make sense.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, and I think that we are, because a lot of the skeptics will come and say, yeah, but I don't want to live in pain. I don't want any of this at all. I just want to live in joy and happiness. And I think that my theory is that we are learning. We're like at a crucial kind of turning point as a species right now. And I think we are learning to know what darkness is, what darkness, pain, suffering, all of these things, which we would consider generally kind of icky things that we consider bad. We're learning to understand what they are at a deeper level, to accept them for what they are, so that we can appreciate what joy, happiness and light are. So we kind of know what the darkness is, and we're accepting of what it is, but we don't run from it. And by knowing and accepting and loving the dark side, we can be more in charge of our own destiny and of our own fate, and being able to experience the things that we want to experience in life. And kind of live out the life that the highest self is really here to experience.
Mm. I really learned to enjoy the darkness, like sitting with my pain or suffering, because I really saw that only through that I'm growing, and only through that I'm experiencing new levels of consciousness.
Right.
Incredible. So bring it on, universe.
Right. I mean, and that's really what's quite amazing about the darkness is in the light, there isn't so much that you need that's happening, or so much that you do. It's not, there's kind of like this level of excitement that's almost lost. But then when you experience the darkness and the pain, it's that contrast and the appreciation that you gain for what you're feeling in the light. So you can almost see the darkness as like the actual, this is the nitty gritty. This is when shit's getting done. You know, this is when stuff is happening. Mm-hmm. And once you work through that and gain, you know, you leave it with an appreciation, with a gratitude, and knowing that I didn't need to avoid it. I just experienced it. I'm not going to push it away. This is a part of who I am. This is a part of my experience and part of life, part of human experience. That really leaves more room for higher vibrational experiences. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of like, you know, it's kind of like we're climbing the rungs of a ladder. Sama, who I mentioned earlier, has a good article about this, where, you know, we are climbing a spiritually vibrational ladder. And, you know, as we come across a new collective consciousness, a new tool set, we're going to find dark sides of it. We're going to find there are dark sides of Bitcoin. There are dark sides of Bitcoiners. There's a lot of things that led me to Bitcoin that were dark. A lot of fears, a lot of anger, a lot of resistance to the old system. And, you know, so we acknowledge the darkness of that rung on the ladder. And then it's like, okay, now I've got that one kind of mastered. It's strong enough for me to hang on, and then I can grab the ladder below me. So if you pretend like there's a limited number of rungs, so then I reach down to the rung that I'm no longer standing on, and then I move that up above me. Once again, I'm going to experience the darkness and experience this, you know, in wholeness until it can support my weight again, and then I keep climbing. It's just like this spiritual evolution. It's really a lot of fun when you look at it that way, I think.
The same here. I think humanity is going through a little dark time at the moment. And and sometimes I'm just happy that it happens, because only through that we can really see what's beyond all that. And I'm super excited to see what we are going to create and how we are going to live after all that dark stuff is through and the light is on. I'm really excited about that. What is your vision for what's coming?
I think that there will continue to be these collectively dark experiences so long as basically until we get like this critical mass point, this gradually then suddenly kind of aspect, because I believe that this is the collective destiny of humanity. We are here individually and collectively because we experience it as individuals, but it is happening collectively. We're just going to continue to get feedback in physical reality that is darkness. And you can see COVID as being one of those events. I think that it was super, super eye-awakening or eye-opening for so many people. And I think, and it just depends on, it depends on the level at which you experience the darkness. So if we look at it linearly, we might see that, for example, with COVID, you experience one thing in your personal life, and then you look at the way that the rest of the world behaves, the way that the centralized institutions behave, the way that people propagate lies, and you start to question, okay, that's weird. Something isn't right here. So then the next time that we experience some kind of collective darkness, you are up one rung on the ladder and you're said, okay, well, wait a minute. So the last time that something like this happened, this feels a little similar. The last time something like this happened, you know, X, Y, and Z were not right. In fact, a few years later, they were proven wrong. And I look back and I kind of regret taking certain actions. And I think, you know, linearly, there are all of these little steps that the collective is taking to realize that there is so much more than we know. And, you know, these institutions are kind of collapsing around us of them. But then there are also people who are on the spiritual path and who are, and see, this makes me nervous to speak about, because then it's like, yeah, do I consider myself to be apart from, you know, separate from this? And it's like, yeah, kind of, I guess, but I know that I'm not, because I'm also going through a lot of these things that I'm still a part of in some way. I'm still part of like these government institutions and living in this system. So I don't consider myself separate, but I do consider myself to be someone who is very much aware of his individual place in the collective and am willing to approach my individual piece of the darkness that is being experienced on a greater level. So what do I mean by that is, instead of it being a slow process of kind of noticing my own programs, my own fears as they get triggered through each individual crisis, instead I just see all of these crises in my own life, and I don't try to fight them in the physical way, but instead I take ownership of them as an individual. So yeah, very long-winded again, my overall vision for humanity is I think that there's going to be a large group of us who want to experience the darkness very linearly. We're going to fight tooth and nail a very long time before they really come into their spiritual sovereignty. But also with each one of these events, there will be more and more people who, like you and I, decide to take ownership of their lives and decide to really do their best to grow on the deepest level that they can and connect with their highest self. And if there's one more thing that I can add to that too, there is also the part of the New Age spiritual movement, which is a red flag for me, because I think that so much of this, the old paradigms, is fighting back so hard against, is it tends to co-op pretty much everything. It tries to grab a hold of pretty much everything. And so I think there are elements of the old paradigm that are latching into the New Age, you know, people who are basically connecting to spirit without religion. And the result is basically just what's called positive pillow sitting, where you just kind of sit and you don't acknowledge the darkness. You don't take responsibility, but instead you I think the law of attraction, you know, the law of attraction people who really, really push to push away the bad feelings and manifest the things that only they think they want. That's also helpful for these old paradigms to survive and thrive, because we're not really taking action to heal the darkness, which is actually a big part of the pendulum of the old paradigm. But we're just pushing it away because we don't like the way that it feels, and we're trying to manifest something different through force. But the reality is that this experience is built to experience the dark, to heal the dark, so that we can heal, so that then that energy is transformed and can be experienced in a higher vibrational, powerful, beautiful, feel good kind of way. So it is up to us to experience the darkness, to accept it. And sometimes that does require action as well. There will be inspired action that comes from some of these darker places, some of these not so good places. And that's okay too. That's okay to live out some of those painful patterns and to act those out and forget who we are at times. That's all part of it. So
true, true. You know what I like in this book, Transurfing, he's talking also about riding the waves of mm-hmm. luck and mm-hmm. and so on and so on. And I think if you're very conscious with your life, your general doing and everything, you can see these, you see these waves in the darkness, you can ride them. And then I think what I experienced after reading that book is that I was able to see the patterns when I was riding a nice wave. And after that, I was way more acceptable. I was way more open, let's say it like that, to the dark times mm-hmm. because I understood the flow of the energy way better.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, and that is 100% my experience too. Because I'll go through these states of almost euphoria where I'm so excited to create and take action and go out and meet new people. And then I'll also go through these states that feel very heavy, feel very almost hopeless, feel very dark. And in those times, what I would have done prior to me being aware of the waves is I would have turned on the TV. I would have, you know, done some kind of feel good activity, scrolled social media to try to make me feel better. And instead, being able to experience that darkness where really the general feeling that I got is I don't want to do anything but just be with myself. I just want to connect to myself in this time. And once I did that, and once I accepted that, I was like, okay, I'm in a little bit darker time right now. I'm a little heavier right now. I don't feel like taking action, and that's okay. The next wave of light and euphoria that came through was even more powerful and more mm-hmm. almost and more productive, right? Because everything was so much clearer. Actually, our Telegram community experiences these waves too. I was producing a newsletter every week for about 6 months, and I just there was like a couple of weeks where I was like, all right, this is feeling a little bit heavier, feeling a little bit more of a chore. I'm not enjoying it as much, and so I just kind of stepped away from it, and it was like almost like this weight off of my shoulders, because I had gotten into this routine where I have to create, I have to do this. People are relying on me. I'm trying to sell a service. Cause I'm doing, I offer, healing sessions, I guess, where I'll facilitate healing sessions. And I wanted to work to make this a big part of my life and the way to support my family. So I was taking deliberate action to do that. And I had a lot of fears around it. And so it got to a point where those fears became, I would say, almost like less relevant because I was working through them and just gaining so much more confidence in who I was. And I was like, I don't need to do this anymore. So I can let go. I can experience the darkness. I don't have to push through this so hard. I can just be with it. And the person that's on the other side of that is super, super, a very upgraded version of myself, I think. And the community, goes through the exact same thing. So there was weeks at a time where we were sharing stuff, we were communicating, we were doing a lot of meditations and, you know, kind of, I think everybody was experiencing a very similar thing actually in the community as well. And, you know, the community just kind of went silent too, all at the same time. So we experienced these waves. You'll have to pay attention the next time you feel one of these waves of darkness as well, because when we experience them as individuals, oftentimes we experience them mm-hmm. collectively too.
Yeah. That's so interesting, isn't it? I love it. Ah, really? It is. It's incredible that more and more people are really waking up to that part of reality as well. I really enjoy that. Yes, we are at the end of this episode and I really enjoyed our talk, I need to say. I learned tons.
Me too. This has been so much fun.
Thank you so, so much. And I hope that you will visit me again on my podcast.
Absolutely. Yeah, I would love to do that. And for anybody who wants to come and hang out in the Telegram group, we do a lot of meditations. We share a lot of great content and stuff. Just visit bitcoin-consciousness.com and then click on community and then you'll find the invite link there. And that's a great way to get connected with everybody. So we also have a podcast. It's just not up right now on Spotify, but you can find it on YouTube. It's just the Decentralized Consciousness Podcast.
Nice. And I will put all the links in the description.
So awesome.
Easy finding.
Awesome. Okay. Sounds great.
Thank you so, so much.
Thanks, Alex. You too. Have a great day.
You too. Adios.
Love what you hear? Then please support the Wildlife Unschooling podcast by checking the donation link in the podcast description. And leave me a 5-star review on Spotify or Apple Podcasts and connect with me on social media for updates. And please feel free to drop me a text. I'd love to hear from you. Thank you so much for being part of this incredible journey.
Yeah, bye. Adios, muchachos. Nee, ich koche jetzt gleich. Ich höre gleich auf zu arbeiten, dann koche ich. Bitte. Nein. Bitte. Nein. Bitte.